I don't know if we think about it a lot or think about it directly in terms of the numbers of stories that we know of about people who influence us. We certainly have a lot of those in the New Testament, in the Old Testament. In fact, Hebrews chapter 11 is about a lot of those stories about people who've gone before us and have demonstrated great faith. Today, we want to consider the life of one individual who has influenced us certainly as much as anybody else, if for no other reason than he's written a lot of the letters in the New Testament. We knew him, first of all, as Saul of Tarsus. Later, he becomes Paul the Apostle. The difference between the two lives is pretty dramatic. Saul of Tarsus, a great persecutor of the church. Paul the Apostle, a great advocate of the church. So we'd like to just remind ourselves today and think about his story and how it relates to ours and perhaps how his influence over us is still effective and powerful. Our story actually begins in Acts chapter 7, because it's in Acts chapter 7 where we read about a fellow by the name of Stephen. And Stephen has this lengthy defense of the gospel as he's preaching to his fellow Jews. And he seems to arouse the wrath of the Jews very, very strongly by what he says in Acts chapter 7 and verse 15. He goes through this lengthy story about their history, and he concludes it by simply saying, "You always resist the Holy Spirit." Their wrath is aroused quite dramatically. In fact, dramatically enough that they grab him and they stone him to death. In chapter 7 and verse 58, we read that one Saul of Tarsus is there, and they lay their feet, all of the executioners lay their feet, lay their garments at Saul of Tarsus' feet. Apparently, that's a means of suggesting that this Saul of Tarsus was the ringleader. And certainly, it says in chapter 8 and verse 1 that Saul approved of his execution. And make no mistake about it, it was an execution. Probably the Romans didn't care, just some other Jewish guy that got killed. So they would not have even worried about prosecuting it. But we do learn from this passage that this Saul of Tarsus continues to persecute the church, as we read in chapter 8 and verse 3. We also find out later on, it's something he never forgot. In 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 13, he mentions to Timothy as he's writing to him, I was a violent man, but God's grace was powerful in my life. And that's what drove the apostle Paul to become what he was. Somewhere between Acts chapter 8, verses 1 through 3, and the other passage that was read this morning, Acts chapter 9, verses 17 through 19, when Ananias baptizes Saul of Tarsus, a dramatic incident occurred. A heavenly intrusion utterly disrupts Saul's life. Saul literally saw the light. How can we get the same experience today? How can this influence us today? Let's think about his life. Let's go back a little ways to a teacher by the name of Gamaliel. We'll call this the Gamaliel connection. In chapter 5 of the book of Acts, verse 33, Gamaliel is a voice of moderation. We're told in that section that he was a great teacher. We're told also that he was a man honored by everyone in the community, had a lot of status, was very highly regarded by members of the community, including the Sanhedrin. But at this point in time, at this particular occasion in Acts chapter 5, the anger and jealousy of the Sanhedrin is kind of in full throat. They want to kill the apostles. They want them to stop preaching about Jesus. And the only way they know to do it is just kill them. And they can probably get away with it because the Romans probably wouldn't care all that much. But it's in this particular situation, a guy by the name of Gamaliel steps in and he spares the life of the apostles. He says, look, if this movement is going to, if it's not from God, it's just going to fall apart at some point. But if it is from God, you may find yourself resisting God. So you better just leave him alone. Which is very interesting. I kind of wonder at this point if Gamaliel didn't perhaps at least have in the back of his mind, these guys are a little different. They're not your usual rebel types. So I wonder if he thought about maybe it really was from God. We don't really know whatever happened to Gamaliel. Did he become a Christian? Have no clue. Perhaps it would have been noted had he been, because he was such a prominent man in the community. But we never find out what happens to him, though he seems to recognize something. He's at least saying something about them that was absolutely true. You know, just if it's from God, you will find yourself resisting God and you can't stop them. But the thing about Gamaliel that's important is he has a star pupil. That star pupil, we find out later on in the narrative, is one Saul of Tarsus. Now, we know Saul, by his very name of Tarsus, was born in a Roman city named Tarsus. It was a free city, and therefore Saul, when he was born, Jewish or not, he was born a Roman citizen. He'll use that later on in his ministry to kind of have a get-out-of-jail-free card, but it's important to him to be able to use that. We do learn, however, by his own testimony in Acts chapter 22 and verse 3, that he was brought up in Jerusalem and educated under Gamaliel. So here's a guy that's got the best education he can get in Jewish culture. He says of himself, again, in Acts chapter 26, again, by his own testimony, that he lived his life up to that point as a Pharisee, one of the strictest sects among the Jews. In fact, in Philippians chapter 3, he makes a point of saying, I was a Pharisee of Pharisees. I was at the top of my game. If there were any status to be had among the Jews, I had the highest. And of course, we know in Philippians 3, he says, it really didn't mean anything. I considered it garbage. But the fact is, he was educated under the best. He lived as kind of the best of the best. And yet, here he is. Something happens to him. What's part of what's interesting to me here, too, is he doesn't seem to have Gamaliel's moderate tendencies. He doesn't moderate anything. In fact, he is so extremely zealous, dragging Christians from their synagogues, slapping them in chains, and persecuting them as much as he can. He's not leaving them alone, thinking that this movement's going to die. Who's going to stop him? It's very interesting also here that you have some tension being built up more and more and more, not just because of Saul of Tarsus, but because of the Christians themselves. Very clearly, there is a widening gulf that's occurring in their community at this point. And the gulf is simply between those who recognize Jesus is, in fact, the Messiah they've been waiting for, and those who do not. Those who do not are extremely jealous. They are extremely angry. They're losing their grip on influence and power. And so something had to be done. We find a guy by the name of Saul of Tarsus who's the zealot who will get it done for us. And they use him. Which brings us basically to Acts chapter 9. And the story of Saul walking along the road. We assume he's walking. I don't know that there's any mention here that he was on a horse. I think some people kind of get that. I'm not sure that's in the text anywhere. If it is, I missed it. Anyway, he's on the road to Damascus, and he's got letters of approval to give to people in the synagogue, leaders of the synagogue, to hand over those who believe in Jesus, who are accepting Jesus as the new Messiah, as the Messiah. And while he's along the road, suddenly, quite dramatically, a flash of light. Verse 3, it says also, he heard a voice. And the voice speaks to him. I don't know whether he can see the one speaking, but he asks the question, who are you, Lord? Apparently, whatever this voice is, however this flash occurred, he recognized something very heavenly, something way beyond his pay grade. He calls him Lord. And of course, in verse 6, we find out that the voice identifies himself as Jesus. In fact, he says, I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. How that felt to Paul, or Saul. I'm going to use the word Saul and Paul interchangeably. Same guy, okay? How that felt to him, whether he felt intimidated by that, whether he went, oops, gulp, you know, I've been persecuting you? Well, this light, apparently, is what caused Paul to be blind. Chapter 22, verse 11. Paul tells us that this is actually what caused his blindness. And a little sidebar here. There's some indication that we have that the Apostle Paul suffered from some ailment pretty regularly from this time forward. My guess is it was his eyes. in Galatians chapter 4 and verses 13 through 15, when he's writing to the Galatians, he says to them, I know that it was some suffering that I had that kind of kept me here. And he says, I know you would have plucked out your eyes and given them to me if you had been able to do that. Which certainly suggests it was his eyes that were causing some problems. Perhaps that was also the thorn in the flesh that the apostle had. We don't know, but that's probably as good a guess as anything. So he was kind of left with a scar from this occasion, which is sort of an interesting thing as well. But there was this brief but dramatic encounter with this light and this voice. And after the light and the voice go away, he has to be led by the hand into Damascus. The afflictor had now become the afflicted. It's interesting also to think about what happened to those who were with him. In this particular instance, it said they were just speechless. They didn't know what to say or do, perhaps. In chapter 22 and verse 9, by the way, Paul gives his account of this three times in the New Testament. Here, Luke's just telling us what happened. In 22 and 26, the apostle Paul himself is recounting these occurrences to those to defend his life and his ministry. So it says in chapter 22, verse 9, others saw the light, but they didn't understand what was said. In chapter 26 and verse 13, it says they all fell, so something happened that affected them as well. What it tells me is there's a lot of confusion going on when this occurs. Just nobody knows what happened. Nobody knows what to do. Saul himself doesn't know what to do. In fact, he has to be led by the hand to be taken into Damascus, which is a very humiliating thing. Here's a guy, you know, at the pinnacle of his career in terms of being a Jew, in terms of being a Pharisee. He's a top man. Everybody looks to him for leadership. Suddenly, he has to be led by the hand into this city and in front of everybody. That's pretty humiliating, I would think, for a guy who is at the pinnacle of his career. They may not have known what had happened, but they knew something happened. All the witnesses could have testified. Yeah, we don't know what it was, but something happened to this guy out there. Isn't it interesting that we have this phrase in our thought processes now and in our vocabulary, we saw the light. In fact, I had a guy say that to me after I had become a Christian. He was saying it in mockery, you know, and I was talking to him at his desk, and he's, you know, long hair, beard, hippie type back in the 70s, 60s. When was it? 70, 1972 when I was converted. He said, so I hear you saw the light. Ha, 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 ha. I just went, yeah, I did. You know, I didn't care that he was saying that. It was true. I was proud of what I had come to believe. We don't have to experience what Saul did in order for us to see the light, do we? Our sight comes with an awakening of faith. However it comes to us, however it happens, sometimes we can't always explain it. Maybe there's something intuitive about it that just kind of, it comes to us. Maybe it's the action of the Holy Spirit upon us that we can't fully explain. But here's a guy who had to spend three agonizing days trying to process all this. His life had been turned upside down, literally in a flash. His momentary blindness caused him to think about his life in a totally different way. Perhaps we go through the same agony, maybe stretched out over a period of time, when we realize that God expects our life to take a totally different direction than it was taking at one point. Or that we have to change things that we have grown comfortable with. And it's kind of an agonizing process, isn't it? We begin to see ourselves and realize the darkness that has overcome and sort of taken hold in our own hearts. And the more we see it, the more we go, I don't want to have to do that. I got to change that too. It's a part of the process. It's all a part of seeing the light more and more and more clearly. But now, this man has a new mission, a new life. And we read a little bit further on as the story continues that both Ananias and Saul have this vision. Ananias is told, go talk to Saul. And he's like, Saul? You mean that Saul? That Saul that's come to persecute everybody? Yeah, that's Saul. Apparently, Saul, while he's there for these 3 days, neither eating nor drinking, just thinking and reflecting, sees a vision also of a guy by the name of Ananias coming to him. So it kind of wasn't a surprise for either of them that when Ananias walks in, he says, you know, God sent me to you. We don't have the dialogue, but I'm guessing Saul said, yeah, I know. I've been expecting you. Okay. So he gets a surprise visit. He is, Ananias, of course, surprised by what he is commanded to do. And Ananias is told, you know what? I want you to go to this guy because I've chosen him. I don't know what Ananias is thinking here other than you chose him. He will be God's instrument to the Gentiles. And Ananias is told, I will show him how much he's going to suffer for my name's sake. I don't know that that's a particular element of any of our thought processes of what's going to happen to us as Christians. And if Saul perhaps hadn't had this vision, would he have said, okay, sure, I'd like to suffer for God. Saul would rather persecute for God. Saul would rather be zealous for God. Which, by the way, he was still pretty zealous afterwards, wasn't he? Just in a totally different direction. Totally different style of life. Totally different, and I don't even want to say totally different belief system, because all he began to see was how consistent being a Christian was with what he had believed before. And that's part of the interesting story about all of this. He's going to be God's chosen instrument. So what happens here? Ananias comes. He says, first of all, receive your sight. Then he gets up, and then what does he do? Even before he eats anything, he was baptized. Well, at that point, why hesitate? At that point, you know what this is all about. After 3 days of thinking about it, after seeing a vision of Ananias, it's like, okay, I guess I really don't have much of a choice here. Now I see. And that's exactly what happens. And as soon as he gets through that particular process, he begins, we see in verse 20, proclaiming that Jesus is the Son of God. And you can imagine doing that much to the chagrin of the Jews and to the surprise of the Christians in that community. The Jews are like, wait a minute, I thought you were on our side here. Well, yeah, I was, but I'm not anymore. You know, a couple of days ago I was, but today I'm not. A couple of days ago you were, but today you're not. Remember the witnesses. They didn't know what happened, but they knew something happened. If they didn't believe Saul, they could have at least gone and talked to some of those witnesses. Yeah, we don't know what it was, but we know something happened to the guy along the road there. We'll read a little bit more about the Apostle Paul's life that perhaps, again, is more of a sidebar here than directly related to this whole thing. But we see here a guy with a new mission and a new life. There are some gaps in time, even in this narrative here. In verse 19, he says, for some days he was with the disciples in Damascus. In verse 23, it says, when many days passed. He makes reference in Galatians chapter 1 and verse 17 about a trip to Arabia, where he went into the desert for a while. He even says there, I think it was about 3 years. It's possible that's this particular time frame in here. We really don't know when it happened. It just apparently it happened pretty soon after he had been converted. Again, that's Galatians chapter 1 and verse 17. And it's very possible that during this time in the desert that he began to get a little bit more information about the gospel, about what happened to Jesus' life. It's possible others told him. We really don't know. But this trip to Arabia is kind of a mysterious portion, a mysterious gap in the apostle's life that we really don't know all that much about. We can only assume a few things. However much time is happening here, wherever it happens, in verse 23, he comes back and he has to escape a plot. Because those who were originally his allies now become his adversaries. And they seek to kill him. And so he has to run. He runs away. He goes away from Damascus, but then he goes to Jerusalem. And he's got a little shock for him there, because the people in Jerusalem, they don't want anything to do with him. They don't know what's happened to him. Maybe they've heard rumors, but they're not quite up to speed on just him and having talked to him or having talked to anybody who's known him. Maybe they haven't even been able to talk to any of the witnesses. Maybe they've just heard rumors, but they do not trust this guy. And so when he goes to Jerusalem, they're all like, hands off. Oh, here comes Saul. Let's walk around. Let's walk on the other side of the road. Or, you know, we're not having him in our house. We don't want him in the synagogues. We don't want him preaching to us. We're still afraid of him. He's treated like a leper. Fortunately, we have a guy by the name of Barnabas, which is another whole story, another whole character that's very interesting. But Barnabas stands in for him. I kind of look at Barnabas as like Jonathan in Saul in David's life. He kind of needed somebody to stand by him, kind of prop him up, give him encouragement, and speak for him, be an ally for him. And all it took was Barnabas to do that. And all of a sudden they go, okay. And then they begin to talk to him and they realize he really was converted. He really is one of us now. And so he begins to speak boldly, and guess what? He gets in more conflict. This guy cannot avoid conflict wherever he goes. And we see it all through his ministry. When you get further along in the Gospel of Acts, in the book of Acts, he creates conflict because he's so zealous for what he believes. He's not looking for conflict, but it just seems to occur around him. It dogs him the rest of his life. And yet, he never seems to whine about what God has called him to do. He seems to accept it because of God's grace and because of what he knew he used to be. And so we sort of, at least in this part of the narrative, we have a great narrative and a great story about one of the great conversions of the early church, don't we? The church's greatest adversary became its greatest advocate. It's interesting in chapter 9, verse 31, that God gave the church a period of rest and growth during this time. At least until the mission of the Gentiles, which Paul was called to do, begins later on. Think about it. Though we will not likely see the light in so dramatic a fashion, it still shines for us to see and believe, partly in thanks to this guy by the name of Saul of Tarsus. Saul changed. He repented. That's what the word means, and so must we. He was baptized, and so must we be baptized. He believed, and so must we. He accepted what God wanted for him. Though it may have been different from what he expected of others, he still took it and ran. Not everybody got to see the light in this dramatic a fashion, but he did. God had a special thing for his life. Today, the light still shines. It shines in our lives. It shines through the message of the gospel. It shines through the pages of the New Testament. It shines in our world anytime the gospel is preached. We want you. We want everybody to see that, to believe it. Like Paul, to be baptized for it. And like the Apostle Paul, to be faithful in your life. It still shines for all to see and believe. Accept it, believe it, follow the light.